Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast. Here to talk all things Arsenal is your host, Matthew Wade.
Hello again, listeners, and welcome to another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. This is a not quite as cheerful as we'd hoped for podcast at this stage of the season, but then given the fixture list, perhaps not that surprising. So you have two people who've recording at unusual times because we're both wrestling different combinations of small children. So you've got me and you've got the wonderful Helen. How are you, Helen?
I'm good, thank you. All the better for having two children sleeping at the same time.
Does that happen?
It's some kind of evil magic. I'm not sharing my secrets.
I was going to say there's money to be made, Helen. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to talk about the football because that's essentially what we are, a football podcast rather than a child-rearing podcast, even though that might prove more popular and more successful. I mean, let's just go straight to it. The Chelsea game, you were there. I mean, before we get into the horrors of Chelsea, how was it sort of being like in a stadium when it was almost full of fans?
Oh, man. I wouldn't even start with in the stadium. I'd start with that walk from... So I go to Finsbury Park and then I walk all the way along past Arsenal Tube, up the stairs, over the bridge. And in, you know, you just... As you walk across the bridge, you see the grand visage of the stadium. And it's just... After 18 months of not going, that feeling was just incredible. And it's funny because it was quite quiet walking along. I don't know if loads of people got there really early and I was cutting it a bit fine. But even though there was no one there, there was just this sense in the air. Everyone was happy. Hmm. And, you know, we're Arsenal fans, right? When was the last time that everyone was happy? only it lasted for about 15 minutes, but... You could feel everyone was optimistic. Everyone was genuinely positive about being there for the first time in, well, probably since, oh, I don't know, the start of 2015, something like that.
Or the
FA Cup win.
Yeah, or I was going to say all the cup final that you and I both had the pleasure of seeing Chelsea lose to us at Wembley. That was a pretty happy day.
The 17 final.
Yeah. Well, that was your standard cup final victory. Glorious sunshine.
Yes.
Mediocre team turning it on for the big occasion.
I was going to say, I would have called that sort of celebratory rather than optimistic, because I don't think we expected to win. And then afterwards, we then didn't expect to have a particularly good season the next season.
Yes.
So there was no like feeling that this was a change in scenery. I don't think that was the case this weekend either, was it?
Well, I expected us to win the cup final in 2017, but I did not expect us to get a fig out of this game. Both teams are in a slightly different position to where they were then.
Yeah. Do you know what, though? It was really interesting. So I went to, for my sins, I went to Spurs Man City last week.
Mm.
My first official visit to the toilet bowl. For those listeners not aware, my husband's a Spurs fan and he had no one to go with. So given that there was a positive chance Spurs might lose, I thought I might actually go for once. That didn't go so well. But it was really interesting because their stewards held everyone back, queuing in the road, ready to get hit by passing cars, I can only assume. To the point where, I mean, we got to the ground maybe 45 minutes before kickoff and we only just got into the stadium literally 1 minute before because our whole section of fans pushed through the stewards eventually because they were so fed up of queuing. It was like they hadn't worked out how to do the COVID stewarding. They just tried to hold everyone back so there wasn't big crowds outside the actual turnstiles. And instead there were just massive crowds of people being held at the bottom of the steps, which spilled into... You don't know what you're doing. And then they started singing "You're a Gooner in Disguise" at the stewards, which he sort of looked a bit awkward about. So I do wonder if there was an element of actual fact about it. The atmosphere there got more and more angry and, you know, aggressive, really, going into their first game back. And meanwhile, ours was, you know, everything was organised. You cruised up to the turnstiles, tap with your new card, in you go, smooth as you like. And then the football started.
Well, the football started better than perhaps we might have hoped for at the very start of the football, because given this sort of looked at the team sheet and went, where are all the players? There are no players. Half this team that are even playing aren't even fit because they've had no preseason. We are so fucked. But actually, they started, you know, they didn't lay too many gloves on Chelsea, but they started quite brightly.
We looked like we might, though. We looked like we had gloves tucked in our back pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there was shades of Brentford about it, actually, because I thought we actually started that game quite well as well, just for not very long.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was no reason in the Brentford game why we stopped playing well, whereas the Chelsea game, it was literally like 15 minutes of semi-decent approach play, bam, job done. And it never felt like we were ever going to get anything from the game past that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where it's painful to say, particularly about Chelsea, who are, as we all know, utterly disgusting, right to the fact that their fans in the concourse at the stadium were singing songs about Bukayo Saka letting the country down, which is...
Oh, well, it was quite clear they were the only fans we've played so far who didn't applaud.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, once a bunch of racist fuckwits, you know, that lot aren't all dead yet. But, yeah, I mean, occasionally you just have to admit, yeah, this is the best Chelsea team since, well, it's probably since Mourinho's team when he was at his absolute peak of his managerial career. You know, far better the team that won the European Cup last time round. And they've just spent 100 million quid on one of the best strikers in world football, which was their primary weakness for the last couple of years. You know, Tuchel's a great coach, but also they've just got, you know, they basically had one player missing out of their perfect selection on first team and substitutes, and they've just got a better squad than us.
Some guy I was walking behind back to the tube after the game said, and I don't know, I haven't fact checked this, but he said that their three subs that they brought on cost more than our entire starting 11 and bench combined.
Yeah, well,
I'm doing a quick toss up in my head and thinking, that can't be right. And then I thought, well, other than Oba.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Xhaka cost, what, 35 maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly that'd be a close
one. A lot else that we've spent big money on.
I mean, that's the funny thing is there are a lot of people I saw online complaining about the game going, you know, Arteta spent this much. There was one person posting who I occasionally see who's quite keen to complain. Saying, you know, Arteta spent £300 million on transfers and the team's worse than it is. And it's like, well, I had to reply going, well, yeah, but actually he's only spent £210 million on transfers. So that's a slight embellishment on your part. And £180 million worth of those players were not available for selection for this game.
A minor detail. Yeah.
So essentially, he added Pablo Mari and Lokonga. one guy who's, you know, just arrived and hasn't got used to it yet. And another guy.
And actually, was one of our best players anyway.
Yeah. And Pablo Mari is the Spanish Pascal Seguin.
I think that's a bit harsh. I do. Don't get me wrong. Clearly not up to playing against Lukaku in the Premier League. Okay, but how many clubs could field their, what is he, fourth choice centre back? Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think at the moment he's probably fourth choice. Yeah.
Yeah. So most teams, if you field their fourth choice centre back against a 100 million quid striker or whatever they've paid over the odds for him, you know, most people are going to get eaten for breakfast, aren't they? Like, who's Liverpool's fourth choice centre back? It's like one of these kids, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think they'd cope that well either.
But it's also
City's slight exception.
Yeah, well, City are different because Pep Guardiola
about six centre backs who cost 50 million quid.
Exactly, Guardiola doesn't bother with defenders unless they cost 50 million quid a piece. But but it's also, I mean, that was. I was saying that partly to complain about Pablo Mari just basically not knowing how to approach playing against Lukaku quite apart from struggling, but also that Seguin wasn't actually that bad. It's just that we had Sol Campbell, Tony Adams, Keown and Toure ahead of him, who were all like really good defenders at that point in their in time.
Yeah, and also he had a cult hero hairstyle.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
my mate
I play badminton with, right, said to me, he turned up last night wearing coral kind of coloured trainers. And he said to me, you turn up in these trainers, you're either going to be damn good or you're going to be terrible. There's like no middle ground. And it's the same with like a cult hero hairstyle. You can't have like a standout appearance and then be like bang average.
Yeah.
You're either going to be like the world's great, like Cristiano Ronaldo, you look like a god. You're either going to be God or you're going to be like the worst parody that it's possible to imagine.
Or like David Luiz, and we're both in the same game.
Yes.
Mind you, speaking of Brazilians with dubious barnets, certainly David Luiz is looking like a much better signing than someone that might be on their way out, who didn't even make the matchday squad due to COVID, although probably wouldn't have done anyway. One, Willian Borges. Don't let the door hit you, etc. of course, our love for him is even augmented by his liking of Chelsea's celebratory post-match tweet, how to really endear yourself with the fan base that already wants you to piss off. But
suggests he's already gone, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, fair play. At least like he really wants to leave rather than going, I live in London, I'm paying me a load of money, I'm going nowhere, which seems to be the policy of everyone else we've wanted to get rid of for the last 4 or 5 years. But back to the game. I mean, obviously...
Oh, I thought we'd managed to gloss over that.
Well, we do have to talk about it a little bit, unfortunately, being what we are doing here. But, you know, you're in the stadium, and so therefore you have the capacity to notice things that those of us who are restricted to a TV view do not have, you know, in terms of perhaps, you know, at times it looked like the centre circle may have been a little bit empty. I'm expecting that's probably fairly clear when you're in the stadium compared to just kind of catching it from that more horizontal zoomed in TV angle. Just like what impressions did you get from your vantage point beyond the fact that, oh shit, Chelsea are good and oh shit, our reserves aren't quite as good as Chelsea's best players?
I think the thing that struck me most was that we have players who are capable of good things, but they don't at the moment seem to work together at all. So if you look at Chelsea, they played, they did not do anything especially fancy at all. It's not like the days of Eden Hazard taking us on and running through us like a hot knife through butter. This was really very simple football from Chelsea. You didn't watch it and think, wow, we've been beaten by an amazing team here. You just felt like that was just inevitable. It was just functional. They did the job and they walked home and they barely broke a sweat in the process. They literally just passed it round us, passed it through us, Bob's your uncle. And the contrast was we were trying anything we could, but our players looked like they'd never played together before. You know, misunderstood passes, making runs that weren't seen. In the first half, I don't think, broad sweeping generalisation here, because I don't genuinely
that's what you're here
for. I don't do statistics, I do eye tests, right? And first half, I didn't remember any balls over the top. Bear in mind, we're playing Martinelli as a centre forward, whose number one asset is pace, against someone like Aspilicueta, who's definitely running downhill these days, or possibly running uphill, depending which way. Analogy.
Both at the same time.
Falling head over heels in the process. But we didn't, it's the same moan I used to have when we played Theo Walcott up front and then used to play tippy tappy to his feet. Like, play to the strengths of your players, right? You've got Saka on the wing, you've got Martinelli through the middle. At least give them a chance. If you're going to hack it clear, even your clearance can be a little bit more refined than just whop it off the pitch or straight to the opposition goalkeeper, right? If you hit it in the channel, you've given them a chance to chase something. And yeah, it was literally like the players hadn't played together. I thought Granit Xhaka had a particularly quiet game on the ball, which is never a good thing for someone whose game is basically built around being good on the ball and not a lot else, because he doesn't offer you that mobility really defensively. No. I don't think he was terrible, but he didn't do anything really. I think and that's the kind of story, just too much bang average, just not really doing much.
I mean, just on Xhaka, I think he had a bit of a game that we've seen all too often from Xhaka, which is like he's ineffective, but it's not really his fault. He's sort of being put in a position where he suddenly, you know, you could see there was a point in the match where he went, oh shit, we're in real trouble here. And then he starts trying to do three people's jobs at once and ends up doing nobody's job. Because, and I think there was a bit of that going on with him. And so therefore he wasn't actually in positions to play to his strengths because he was too busy trying to do things that weren't his strengths because the pieces weren't functioning well enough around him. And Chelsea, you know, as you say, unspectacular, but very well oiled. So they'll basically all know exactly what they're doing. And cohesive squad building. It's almost as if these players are bought to play together.
And almost as if they also had a plan for how we play. So how do what side of the pitch would you say we score most of our goals from, Matthew? Guess what? They worked that out. You know, I know that both Saka and Tierney definitely look a little bit on the rusty side anyway, but there was no threat from that side at all.
Yeah.
Chelsea just went, right, well, if you want to go wide, they literally, I don't know if you could see this on the telly, they defended the width of their 18-yard box and they went, you've got no presence in the middle.
Yeah.
If you want to lob the ball in the box, and let's face it, most of the crosses didn't make the first man anyway, be our guest. We'll mop it up. And if you happen to get one, we'll score two up the other end anyway.
Well, what this Chelsea team is very good at, which is the thing that sort of Lampard tried to do with them but never got working because he couldn't quite work out. He was sort of indecisive about what exactly he was trying to achieve. But there's a period where he tried to do this and Tuchel's coming and gone bang, which is they expand and contract positionally really well. So when they've got the ball, they're super compact. Their fullbacks, wing-backs are both strong, physical, athletic, and don't mind the rough and tumble of, you know, of some fairly meaty stuff. And so when
Alonso should have been booked in the first like 5 minutes.
Well, isn't that the story of Marcus Alonso against Arsenal? Should have, but didn't. But you know, so in the defensive line they go to a five, which means they're just like there's just no space. When you've got the ball, but it's not in their defensive third, the fullbacks tuck into midfield, making it really narrow, which gives you the width. But then as soon as you've got the width, unless you've got someone with some presence in the box, it don't matter. And then when they've got the ball, then suddenly fullbacks go properly wide and bomb on because they've got their two sitting midfielders. Yeah. And I think from Arsenal, from what I saw on the TV, it seemed to be that it was that thing where a lot of people have been very critical of the strategy. But the difficulty is the only other real overarching strategy that would have been available to us would have been maybe going with the back three. But then when you've got your two first choice centre-halves out, that's tricky.
Yes.
And we saw in the away game at Stamford Bridge last year that Arteta's willing to do that against this Chelsea team because it is the best way to play against them if you match up against them because they can't get those same overloads. But also what happened on top of us not being able to deploy a tactic that might have been more effective, unless you think of a central defensive line of Chambers, Holding and Marie is an ideal back three.
Sounds a bit slow.
Yeah, exactly. Not so good on the halfway line or the half turn. Mm-hmm. But also there was a thing that Lukaku came in and for some reason Pablo Mari was like, oh yeah, I've got to get tight to my man. And Lukaku's like, ah!
What? Oh man, that was doing my head in. I mean, what is Lukaku's biggest weakness?
But probably intricate footwork.
He's a second touch tackler if ever I saw one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. He's, you know, he's not like...
He's not got the
Let
first
him have
touch,
a touch.
Bergkamp, no.
No, exactly. Let him have a touch and then nick it off him. Don't get in a wrestling match with him because guess what? Refs aren't giving fouls this year anyway. It's either nothing or it's a yellow card.
Yeah.
Don't get in a fight with him because all he's going to do is leave you on the floor and run off.
Yeah. Strange enough, get into a wrestling match with the strongest centre-forward playing at the highest level in European football.
When you're the skinniest centre-back I've ever seen. Like...
Yeah. And of course, then there's a result of that. You know, he's getting too tight. Lukaku's beasting him and suddenly everyone around him's going, shit, he needs help.
And then
it's like the Alamo. They all leave their posts to try and kind of get the bottleneck, and then Chelsea like,
I don't blame them.
No.
In a way, because I'm watching it from the stands and thinking, every time this happens, why, he's going to bring him down, he's going to turn him. You know, I had, and I think it, the reality is actually, if you look at the number of times Lukaku actually genuinely got the better of him, it was teeny, right?
Mm.
But the problem was you felt like it could happen every single time. And when it didn't happen, it was more luck than judgment.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's what you really saw from the game is that going to Inter and playing under Conte, Lukaku's basically retained all the attributes he's always had, but has got smarter tactically. So he's basically knows how to use what he's got.
Yes.
In a way that helps his team most. Whereas sometimes, you know, like a lot of players do, he tried to do too much before in a way and sometimes took himself out of the areas where he could be most useful. But now he sort of worked out at Inter that if I'm just sort of occupying that central zone, very few defenders are going to get the better of me all game. And those who are strong enough to fight with me generally aren't quick enough to keep up with me. And... then all that, and then I'm going to be the perfect wall, you know, one touch wall pass or two touch.
Yeah. And I think that was the point. It felt like a consummate team performance from Lukaku.
Yeah.
It wasn't built around him, it was built around getting the best from the team. And the ultimate reality, that meant he got a goal and he probably should have had another one that Leno tipped onto the bar.
An amazing save.
Yeah, it was.
As if buying a new goalkeeper for competition helps.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, ironically, if he'd put it closer to the corner, it might have been an easier save.
Yeah.
Because you only need to get a little tip on that to get it over the bar around the post. But because it was hit really hard, but not quite at full stretch, it was a bit of an awkward one for him to get enough on it to get it up and over the bar. So, yeah, I think he did pretty darn well on that one. But, I mean, look, shot stopping has not been his biggest issue, Leno. You know, no. Clearly, there are issues ball at feet and there are issues with the high ball.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, so obviously Chelsea got the opening goal, you know, exploiting exactly what we've discussed fantastically well. Lukaku sucks people in, plays it in, and then the people he sucked in can't keep up with him and he makes the second run. And the second goal was essentially very similar, only James was slightly further inside and didn't need any to pass it to anyone. but the construction...
It was a great finish, but it was shocking defending.
Yeah, it was defending that illustrated panic and a lack of mutual trust because people were not in the positions they would normally be. And actually, the one thing you can say for Arteta, despite lots of criticisms that it can either fairly or unfairly be targeted at him, you know, a structural shape that at least makes sense defensively has been something that's been relatively consistent since he took over, which was the big flaw that Unai Emery had, is that actually we were actually a bit better going forward under Emery until the end. But defensively, it was like, who the fuck's where? So, you know, it does show the impact that Chelsea had in this game, but also, I suppose when you're aware that there's so many key components missing, it's going to affect a team's confidence. Particularly, as I say, is quite apart from the people who are absent, there were three or four players in the pitch who basically had no pre-season or have been injured, you know, they're only two-thirds fit. So it's been a tough start.
I think it definitely felt like we need another centre-back, and it felt like I have no idea who our preferred right-back is right now.
Neither does Mikel Arteta.
I'm not even sure who I think it should be.
No.
It's one of those, I'm not sure there's a good option here right now. I'd love it to be Bellerin from a purely emotional point of view, but
he seems to have checked out.
Oh man, I've not seen the Bellerin of old for a very long time.
Yeah, there was a period sort of last season for a little bit where I thought, okay, but then he seems to have mentally checked out somewhere on the line and he looks a bit like...
I'm not sure it's that. I just don't think he's ever got back. I don't think he's ever got back to the fitness, the sharpness. And he just looks a bit wooden to me. Like his ability to change direction has just gone.
Yeah.
And that makes me very sad, actually. You know, harking back to that 17 Cup final, that's the one where as we were walking down Wembley Way, everyone was singing for Hector Bellerin. And yeah, here we are.
Well, I mean,
about him as future captain material.
I mean the physical element is huge, and as you say, it's that lack of agility on the turn and that first step of acceleration, which were so much hallmarks of what he brought to the team. But I think also whether it's checked out or whether it's a diminishing confidence or whether it's just like he recognizes that he's not really doesn't really fit into what Arteta wants from fullbacks, which is one of two things, neither of which is Bellerin's strength.
I don't know. You sit there and you look at Cedric Suarez, Bellerin can play exactly the same role as Cedric Suarez, really.
The one thing Cedric Suarez has over Bellerin, which is the only thing he has over Bellerin, he has other things that aren't, but is that he is better at crossing from deeper and wider positions. Which, you know, you can, would make more sense if we had a different front line. But also it's that thing, I guess.
But if you're trying to balance Tierney,
yeah,
the reality is our biggest issue when Tierney, Saka, etc. does not work when teams are set up because they know we only ever go forward down the left. You know, I know when I used to play hockey, I always draw on my other sport experience because I had no actual formal football coaching, but wasn't allowed it back in my day. Girls weren't allowed to properly play. We used to play like a swinging... I played either left back, right back, I can't remember. But we used to play like a swinging ship. So when one side goes forward, centre-back shift across, your other full-back tucks in. And to my mind, it's not really that different in football. You're still trying to occupy positionally the same sort of space.
Yeah.
But if the ship's always turning right or always turning left in our case, well, guess what? It's pretty darn easy to work that out and adjust. So you have to keep that swinging motion. You have to use your right wing too with actual genuine intent now and again, rather than like, oh, look, we're going to pass it out and come straight back again and back round the back. Oh, look, it's at Tierney again. You know, so to me, if you're going to genuinely play with a rotating back four, Bellerin's still got a potential. Bellerin of old would still have a role in that
thing. Oh, no, Bellerin of old because...
Bellerin of current.
Yeah.
Unless there's some sort of miracle to regain all those different skill sets that you mentioned, the physical assets that he seems to have lost, it's hard to see how that happens.
You know, the thing he had was an explosiveness, which meant that other areas of his game that weren't as strong could be covered, but also meant that he could do that thing, as we saw at times, where he was basically playing, I'm playing right full back and right wing simultaneously. and of course, that's just not possible for him at the moment. And given that we do have this left-sided bias, it means that what is required from a right fullback in this Arsenal team at the moment is slightly greater defensive solidity than Bellerin's ever really had, and particularly at the moment, and an ability to play slightly more controlled combination football. I mean, Bellerin's such a front-footed fullback, you know, that he works in a team that is really pushing down that side. And it was fine when you had Ozil on the, you know, drifting out to the right as he wanted to do. And because you instantly had a triangle of three players there who you made interchange much more possible. Whereas at the moment, you've got Pepe on his Todd doing the, I'm going to do a number of different things in this game. Whether any of you can work out what they are, it remains to be seen. Like even against Chelsea, like the amount of times Pepe got into great positions and made great runs, but there was so much out of the pattern of like what of the rest of the game that they were kind of wasted. Also because we have very few people that can play a through ball at the moment.
Well, speaking of balls, for better or worse, the football is back and the season is not in full swing, but it is swinging, if you excuse the reference, because we're going to talk about our sponsors, Manscaped, who, of course, are very keen to ensure that nobody out there unnecessarily has a Willy-Ann cut around their Willy-Ann. So you too can clean up your midsection with Manscaped, the proud sponsors of the Daily Cannon podcast. Be a proper lad this time and shave your bits with the best in global leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. Yes, that's right. It's for you, if you're listening to this. That's 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code DCPOD20 at manscaped.com. That's DCPOD20 at manscaped.com. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you level up your full body grooming game so you can enjoy the games, whatever they may be, clean and properly cared for. They have forever changed the grooming game with their Performance Package 3.0. Head to toe, this is the ultimate male hygiene bundle. The Performance Package 3.0 comes with the Lawnmower 3.0, Weed Whacker, and formulations to round out your grooming routine, bring your boys back to life, which is more than Arteta's managed to do, and in the game for all 90 minutes. You've probably heard of the Lawnmower 3.0, aka the best ball trimmer ever created. This is the best trimmer on the market for those of you in need of a shave in more delicate and special regions. The third generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to advanced skin-safe TM technology pioneered by Manscaped, also TM. There's even an LED light, so you can see everything you're doing there, wherever there is, whether it's up there, down there, or around there. Also included is the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, which is waterproof and uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system, which is quite a mouthful. The nose and hair ear trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology as well, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. And of course, wherever your holes are, you don't want any nicks, snags, or tugs. And 79% of partners have polled have admitted that long nose hair is a major turn-off. When does nose hair become a moustache? When is it, how far up or down does it have to be before it becomes acceptable? These are questions that we need answers to. Anyway, if you're in doubt and you want to make sure that things are trim as they can be, then why not use the best tools for the job here? Also, don't forget about the liquid formulations to round out the grooming game with the performance package. There's the Crop Cleanser Body Wash to keep your hair and skin feeling healthy and fresh, and the Manscaped Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, anti-chafing. Yes, you can probably imagine what it does. It also moisturises as well as deodorises. So there you go, win-win. You also find the Crop Reviver Ball Toner. It's a testes toner that's designed to give you the extra boost you need to get the job done on the pitch. Which makes me wonder if we should get a squad-wide deal for the Arsenal first team. Although some of them seem to be perhaps already taking part of such wonderful products. Anyway, look and clean as well groomed as head to toe as one of the all-time greats David Beckham, or indeed someone like Thierry Vavavoom, he always looked very well turned out, or even a slightly more sculpted Robert Pires. Anyway, get 20% off and free shipping with the code DCPOD20 at manscaped.com. That's DCPOD20 at manscaped.com. Choose Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
Which brings me sort of on to what I wanted to move on to, really, because there's no point killing ourselves about the Chelsea game with half a team, is the new arrivals. And of course, the key one being a certain Norwegian chap we may have got a look at last season, who I think for some of the reasons you've talked about will be a massive, massive improvement for the team, more than perhaps his ability itself.
I'm just laughing because last time I was on this podcast, I definitely remember saying, I think Ramsdale's terrible and I'm not convinced that Ødegaard is the solution to any of our problems. And here we are.
Well, I wasn't going to bring that up. But yeah. I think actually the more I've seen just pre-season and now, the more it makes me think that Ødegaard is not the player that the people thought he was going to be at 15, but is a player that can bring a lot to this team just by the virtue of the way he plays and the positions he plays in. And I think, I mean, for me, it's no coincidence that Pepe went from being the first half of the season, Pepe last year was like, holy fuck, what's this guy doing? Has he forgotten how to play football? To, oh shit, he's suddenly scored 14 goals this season or 15 goals. How the hell did that happen? And it was partly because he had someone who would get close enough to him, but also knew when to go to him, knew when to run away from him, and could actually play him the ball on the run, which is just not happening. Yeah. He keeps on getting the ball.
So look,
posting up.
I wouldn't. With Pepe, I have some sympathy from yesterday. Yesterday, I've lost track of, was it yesterday? No, it's been 2 days. At the weekend, anyway, I had some sympathy for him because I felt like he was genuinely one of the few players, in the same way that against Brentford, it was Emil Smith-Rowe. Against Chelsea, it was Pepe who, when he got the ball, he tried to make something happen. There was no hiding. And with Pepe, there's definitely been days when he's been like invisible. But he wanted the ball and he tried to make things happen. You know, he was decisive and it didn't come off. That's the reality. It didn't come off. But I had no problems with... That's his game, right? It's high risk, high reward. And when it comes off, it makes a difference. It has an impact on the game. And I think quite often he was creating good opportunities or good patterns of play that then, like you were saying, other people weren't making the runs, weren't backing him up. So it was then wasted. Mm. You know, he'd open up some space, but then we'd not then take the next step and it would just close back up again. So I don't think he was as bad as perhaps, I think he was probably one of the people I wouldn't have criticised too much off the back of the Chelsea display. Although obviously he'd like a little bit more. The thing with that, I like him as a player. Okay. I like the skill set he brings. And I think he's got lots of qualities that really, really we are desperate for. That eye for a pass, obviously, being the critical one there. But also his understanding of space. You know, if you look at Smith Rowe, he's a player who he creates space, he creates opportunities by his movement, by pulling people out of place and leaving room for other people to go in, which only works if the other people then make that run.
Yeah.
So he's a player that can, he's the oil that can make a team work, but he's not, like he's not a one-man band. He needs people around him. And Ødegaard is another one cut from the same cloth. So the more you start to get these kind of intelligent players who have a feel for where people are moving, where to go to make room for other people, that's instantly much harder to defend against, because people are not just defending against their opponent, they're defending against how their opponent moving allows other people to then attack their space too. It's like overloading them with things to think about comparatively. So from that perspective, I'm thrilled that we've got someone of Ødegaard's caliber and style coming in. My biggest concern, my only concern really with him, is that I think he's incredibly one-footed.
Yes.
And in the same way, I wonder if there's an issue at the moment, and it's not an issue that's going to go away if so, where Premier League football has become so sports science based, the level of analytics that goes into scouting opposition, they're now able to pinpoint these things with so much greater accuracy that teams are prepared for it. Because if you look at it, Mesut Ozil, when he joined Arsenal, ripped it up, right? Absolute game changer for us for a couple of seasons. And then it was like people clocked that he's actually very one-footed as well. And if you show him onto his other foot, guess what? Yeah, okay, 1 in 10, he might pull a rabbit out of the hat, but mostly, you know, on a percentage basis, he's not going to be turning in those kind of, how did he just see that eye of the needle pass? You know, when the screenshots people used to do on Twitter, where they take a picture of the situation when Ozil plays a pass and go, how did he see that this was the ball that then was an assist, right? But that just disappeared. And again, I think people clocked on to one-footedness. I worry if that's going to be a problem.
I
hope it won't be.
I do think there's another element there, which I think with Ozil, I think one thing that really took away from his effectiveness is at some point, and whether you can link it to the fallout of the German national team and the injuries he had just prior to that, but you know, that hip and back injuries, but at some point he stopped making runs beyond the front player.
Yes.
And
well, just him though.
No, not just
the
him.
The entire Arsenal team stopped making runs beyond.
but that meant it so much, that made it so much easier for people to, because they knew that
where he was going.
Yeah, they knew the zones he was going to operate in, and there was those zones were decreasing in size. You know, as we always used to comment, he was the guy that covered the most distance, and that stopped being the case because he was playing more safely. Now, Ødegaard now is a player more akin to late Ozil in terms of the positions he takes up, but unlike late Ozil, you know, he's never going to have that burst beyond that Ozil used to have, and he's never really played that way. But unlike late Ozil, he's slightly better carrying the ball past opponents than Ozil was at that stage in his career. And crucially, much better presser, much better defensively positioned, and better intelligent work rate or a work rate that has impact, whereas Ozil actually ran around quite a lot but always looked like he didn't really know what he was doing.
And my parallels with Ozil are not they're the same player by any
means. No, I know.
Quite clearly they're not. My concern is just that from an this was certainly my concern when we spoke before anyway, from an offensive perspective, is he going to be able to be nullified too easily because he can be shown onto the other foot? And that's my, I guess that's my challenge to him, if he's so interested in my opinion, can he overcome that?
It's a totally unfair comparison, but it didn't do Lionel Messi too much harm.
Not that one-footed though, is he? Let's be honest.
He's pretty one-footed, to be honest. I think out of those 600 odd goals, probably about 480 have been scored with his left foot.
No issue with being a one-footed or a 90% one-footed finisher. Well, I do have some issues with it, but the point is that you're already in the position, and if you're taking something first time, defenders they haven't got the opportunity to show you into a different place. But if it affects you creating the chances in the first place, that's slightly more problematic.
Well, what I will say is Ødegaard is very well-footed, but he's no Nigel Winterburn. He has actually kicked a ball with his right foot. one of my favourite desperately left-footed players is Di Maria, partly because he had the good grace to get sent off against us in an FA Cup game for having a strop at the ref, which is just very funny. But also just because he's a player that seems genuinely allergic to using his right foot and will contort himself into all kinds of positions.
There's a few
amazing things
there
with his left foot.
Lamella was like that as well. Oh, I'll do a Rabona instead of kicking it with my actual correct foot.
Screw him.
We had Rosicki, of course.
Yeah, well, Rosicki never used his right left foot, no.
No.
It's unusual for
the outside of the right boot, didn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, just what I was going to say about Ødegaard just is we have to be pretty pleased with the price as well, given.
And that's the thing, we didn't overpay for him. I think that's crucial. You know, if we'd spun 50, 60 million, I'd be like, but 30 mil?
Because lots of people have been like, we should have got Madison.
Many people better at that price.
Yeah, exactly. Because lots of people have been saying we should have got Madison. And it's like, well, Madison would have cost twice as much and has got dodgy hips.
Yeah.
And so
English premium as well.
Exactly.
Probably take an 80 million to get him.
So, you know, we can both be, for possibly slightly different reasons, but happy with the Ødegaard signing. Certainly it gives us quality where we are lacking in it. And we know from experience that a front three of some combination of Ødegaard, Smith Rowe, Saka and Pepe can function behind a striker and can actually allow us to play a kind of football which allows Aubameyang as a centre forward to actually be an option rather than just being the, you know, what we had before, which means he just doesn't work in that position. But of course,
it does feel like it makes the back four much, much more likely. Not that I thought that was in doubt anyway.
Yeah,
It does feel like we're moving that way because you can't have all those players and then be playing a 2-1 at the front. It just doesn't work.
I mean, theoretically, it also makes the fabled 4-4-1-2-2-1 or 4-3-3, whatever you want to call it, a tactical option as well, because although Ødegaard at least has the work rate to play in that deeper role, if not in a way that Ozil was never ever going to. But we do have to talk about other things. We can celebrate the departure of some people departing, but Aaron Ramsdale's arrived, and I have to say the interview helped. Because he's extremely likable and seemed absolutely made up.
Happy.
Yeah.
He's so happy to have signed for us. Oh, man.
Which
I don't
goes
quite
a long
know
way.
How to feel about that, right? Because if you think how happy people were to sign for us in the sort of invincible type era.
Yeah.
They were happy to sign for us because they were great and they thought we were great. And now we've got someone of the level of Aaron Ramsdale who's thrilled to play for us because he can't quite believe his luck that he's dead average. And he's managed to catch a ride to us. And the reality is he wouldn't have been able to if we weren't now fairly mediocre ourselves. So it's like a kind of backhanded compliment almost, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if that's strictly the case, simply because your second choice goalkeeper tends not to be, you know, you could...
Yeah, I mean, but Matthew, I mean, you don't spend 30 mil on a second choice goalkeeper.
Yeah, but Arsene Wenger, you know, looking at transfer inflation, Arsene Wenger spent a similar proportion, given what the transfers are now, on Richard Wright.
Well, that doesn't bode well, does it?
I mean, it's a tricky one with Ramsdale because we've all seen bits where we think, oh God, he's not very good, is he? Puts it back in the danger zone, started the season really badly in teams that got relegated. But then he has been voted player of the year 3 years in a row at the clubs he's been at.
In teams that have got relegated.
Yes, but the fact
we didn't score enough goals. We didn't really like anyone else. We were so bad that even though we... So Phil will take... My husband, right? He played goalkeeper. And he said he used to get man of the match performances all the time when his team lost like 10-0.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was 10-0, but it could have been 20-0.
Yeah.
And they don't even have to be great saves. But if you're making saves, people are like, hey, he saved us another goal. It's like a... There's nothing to be positive. It's like Arsenal. There's nothing to be positive about. So let's try and find like one inventive bright spot. We only lost 2-0 to Chelsea and it could have been 6. It's that kind of mentality.
We had less first teamers than when we went up to Old Trafford and got gubbed up there. So
that was when Arteta signed for the club.
Yeah, exactly. The trolley dash.
That's the thing. This has not been a trolley dash.
No.
For whatever you make of Arteta, and I know there are increasingly polarised views on him, which feels familiar somehow.
Yeah.
It feels like we've been here before as a club. But the business we've done this summer as a club feels like it's been... good business. It's been well thought through. It's been positions we needed people. Doesn't mean we filled every position we needed people, but the people we've bought, we've not bought another person in a position we already had loads of people. You know, Kieran Tierney's backup was a massive hole. Centre back, massive hole. Someone to play alongside, hopefully Partey, massive hole. Although I know we re-signed Xhaka today, did I see?
Yes, a hole filler.
Yeah. we've nailed down Tierney, we've nailed down Smith Rowe, you know, solid business. But also we've bought players who, when you're rebuilding, there's no point buying someone who's 29. Because by the time you've got your team, it's going to take a year or two to get anywhere near a good level, even assuming you've got the right pieces. If you bought someone who's 29, it's like buying Willian. He was a short-term fix. Someone who adds any value now, because now is not when we're going to have our success.
Yeah, and also you look at the makeup of our squad and who did well last season, and it's, you know, no coincidence that it's Saka, Smith Rowe, Tierney, you know, who stood out as players to give us hope. And so you want to make sure that you're building a squad that at least can have some kind of development together and hopefully have peaks that align in some capacity, rather than what we've got at the moment, which is like, oh, we've got like 3 peak age players and everyone else is either old or young. Or is it even as many as 3? Yeah, well, it's probably is 3 peak age players. It's just they're not necessarily people that fans want to keep. And... you know, from a business model as well, it also makes sense to go down that route, because theoretically, even if it goes tits up, you'll get some of your money back. There'll be some resale value, rather than us having to continue the trend of the last thing I want to talk about this week is paying people to fuck off, which seems to be what we're doing, either paying to or letting them walk out the door for nothing, That's you, Syed Klasinac, and that's you, Julian Borges, and whoever else might depart. But of course, we're desperately trying to find someone to buy a right back off us, because that would allow us to buy a right back we actually want rather than a combination of fillers that we don't necessarily. If only Maitland-Niles would actually knuckle down and admit that being a right back for Arsenal is a shitload better than being a central midfielder for West Brom. That would be a good thing.
Well, it's a bit weird though, isn't it? I don't know. I'm a bit torn because I think as a defensive right back, he's really solid.
Mm.
And he's obviously got a good range of passing. But my God, his crossing is terrible.
Oh no, he can't cross for shit, despite the fact he started.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
If we're playing this swinging ship, patent, trademark, send me some royalties in the post. If we're playing that, you can't play someone on the right who can't cross. It doesn't work.
Unless you're using him as Arteta started using at the start, as this inverted wing back, which then means you're pulling your number 10 and your right-sided player into wider positions. But we don't really have the personnel to make that work. So yeah, it's a tricky one.
But again, it comes back to this. What if I could describe Arsenal in one word right now, it would be predictable.
Yes.
And I don't just mean that in terms of we go into a game with Brentford and it's predictable that we lose.
No, I know. Yeah,
I mean it in terms of even just general patterns of play. You kind of know where the ball's going to go and you know it's just going to come straight back again, back around the back, back out. Then we'll try something because we've given up. We've got no ideas. We'll lose the ball and someone will counterattack us and probably score 50% of the time.
Well, I mean,
our play in attack, in possession, is very, very predictable. And we have to have other routes to goal. That's the reality.
Yeah, and that's why both Odegaard and Thomas Partey, if he can ever stay fit, are so important, because Partey accelerates our game in a way that none of our midfielders can, and therefore which just means that opposition defences can't do the setting up.
I'll tell you what, actually, I was really pleasantly surprised about, because it's obviously hard to get a real handle on it on the telly, but Sambi Lokonga, I was really pleasantly impressed by. I thought that for a long time, you think how bad we've been at playing out from the back. So to have a player who is almost Gerrard-like in role, prepared to step back into the defence, pick up the ball, and then not just pick a pass, but also carry the ball on occasion. You know, it comes back to that predictability factor. You know, sometimes you want to pass it, other times you want to carry it, because if you do always one or the other, teams will defend accordingly.
Yeah, I think what's been interesting with Lokonga is he seems to be bringing more as a progressive player than we were led to expect, and seems slightly more off the pace defensively than we were led to expect, which is, you know, I mean, hey, he's had a few weeks in the highest paced league in the world coming from Belgium, which is not exactly the peak of competitiveness.
But also he's playing alongside Granit Xhaka. You know, defending is a team exercise.
Yeah, but
ultimately.
But it's also the thing of, you know, as we saw against Chelsea, they were both midfielders were tasked with doing too many different jobs each because of the problems around them. So you know, before we can draw conclusions about either of those players, really, I mean, Xhaka, we've seen enough to know kind of what we're getting. But we don't know how he's going to fit into the structure that's being developed, really, or how that partnership might work in Partey's absence, until at least we've had a chance to, you know, have a team emerge a few games together. I mean, I don't like making excuses, even though I am Mr. Positive, but, you know, I mean, finding out after the Brentford game that not only is there a COVID, but literally every player had been tested and they didn't know who was going to be available to play the game until pretty soon before kickoff, might give some indication as to why it was such a weird performance. Not to mention some of the structural issues that we have anyway as a team and the fact that strikers were out. But that must be quite difficult to deal with. And then to have your next two games against two of the best teams in the world with like a shit ton of players missing
is hardly an ideal start to the season, particularly when you're having to rely on people who've either never played together or never played for the first team before, or have not had any pre-season, which is literally about half the players you have to select. So,
or have got their confidence absolutely shot by the looks of it in the case of Bukayo Saka.
Yeah, well, I think also with Saka, you know, he's sat all three, really, hasn't he? He's had that terrible experience in the summer, which he's going to be recovering from. He's had no pre-season at all. He's not fully fit yet, and he's not played in with some of the players around him in the positions they were playing before.
And the expectation is so high as well, because he had such a great season last year.
No. And also the fact that he was playing on the left, which actually he's shown that he's most of his recent best games have been on the right. And so, you know, there's quite a lot going on there. But also just like pre-season is for fitness. And if you haven't had a pre-season, you are just off the pace when it, and particularly playing against someone like Reece James, who's just a bit of a beast.
Quick question. Yeah. Was it a penalty?
If he's Harry Kane, if he's Jamie Vardy, those penalties get given, or Mohamed Salah, just for completeness sake, those penalties get given every single time. Or Son, or Ali.
Or Dele Alli.
Yeah. You know, do I think they should be penalties? Probably not. So I'm coloured because I think Saka's got a history of the old stick your leg out slightly sideways to catch the contact. He's definitely got that in his locker. On the other hand, if you look at the angle where Reece James is running across Saka away from the ball, it's hard to argue too much that he's caused some contact. So if it was against us, I wouldn't be like, oh, we massively got away with one there. But equally, I'm like,
But you wouldn't think we would have been screwed over if that penalty got given against us, would you?
If it got given against us, I'd be like, that's a joke, but it's not unexpected. It happens all the time.
I mean, for me,
those penalties get given for those challenges all the time. And the concern is, why when it's us, is it never given?
I mean, for me, it was a penalty simply because the defender didn't attempt to do anything to do with the ball.
Oh, but in that case, it's a red card.
Well, I think you're thinking of a different team here.
I think I'm thinking of the rule book, which says if you make a challenge with no whatever the technical.
We all know that the rule book which bits of the rule book get quoted depending on who's making the decision for which team and when.
Well, I didn't realise the rule book is now it's a foul unless we want to let the game flow, in which case we won't blow it. That's a new rule. I didn't quite follow that one.
VAR, perhaps we're using too much. Now let's not bother.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. If that penalty was given on the pitch, it doesn't get overturned by VAR.
No. I'm not going to turn this into my ref bashings. I mean, I think, again, one of the less good referees in the Premier League. And ultimately, none of us can sit here and even pretend it would have changed the result because Chelsea were so comfortable. And
isn't that depressing?
It is depressing. But at the end of the day, I'm looking at it and looking at the circumstances and just going, you know, there's not much else that could have gone wrong before the game. You know, you're missing half a team. The players you're missing are most of your best senior players. And you're missing, like, your two good centre-halves. Apologies to Rob Holding, but, you know, playing against pacey strikers is never going to be his strength. Against a £100 million striker who's got a point to prove. you know, there's... And half your players who even are playing aren't even fully fit. You know, It's the same reason why we got gubbed up at Old Trafford all those years ago. I wasn't that upset about it because it was like, we were so riddled by injuries, we had to play Armand Traoré at left back, who already knew.
No. You were upset by it, but you didn't read anything long term into it back of that one result. That's the reality.
If you're playing the players we did at the start against a really good team, and a bit like the game against Chelsea, if you're playing that starting lineup, they're all going to have to play to their maximum level for you to have a chance. just because there's a lot of them that wouldn't be playing under normal circumstances. And there's reasons why they wouldn't be playing. It's because they're not as good as the people that would be playing.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Quick look forward to West Brom League Cup. Do you care?
Of course I care, Matthew. Would I be fielding my first 11? If it have a chance of having any kind of confidence for Sunday, then yes. Saturday, then yes. You know, I think right now we could do with any kind of level of combination training we can get.
Yeah, no. So, well, it's not as if we're going to be overwhelmed with fixtures in midweek for the rest of the season, is it?
No, exactly. Exactly. So,
and because I think we're going to put a strong team out, I think we'll win.
Bloody hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, although West Brom absolutely gubbed Sheffield United in there at the weekend. Was that right?
Oh, and obviously they've lost their best player, so that'll be why.
Yeah, well, you know, although the guy who replaced Ramsdale in goal for Sheffield United did look like someone who'd won a raffle.
Is he worse than Runison? Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, it was only one game. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
But
you know what I think of Ospina? And Runison is worse than Ospina.
Yeah.
So if he's worse than Runison, then they've got real problems.
Well, I mean, then your fella should probably get his gloves back on.
I'm not moving to Sheffield.
Well, no.
Over my dead body. Maybe that's why Ramsdale's so excited to sign for us. He's finally getting to come down somewhere like south of Stoke.
Well, I mean, well, he played for Bournemouth.
Yeah, that's true. It was on loan there, wasn't it? So.
No, he was a Bournemouth player. That's he's got sold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he was, but obviously it's still sleepy town on the South Coast, retirement town. It's not exactly the bright lights in the big city. And of course, yeah, I mean, Man City at the weekend, dare we even say anything, or shall we just pretend that's not going to happen?
I cannot imagine a world in which we get a result from that game.
No, neither can I.
Even if Pep goes full, like, galaxy brain.
Yeah.
Even if he plays all his players out of position against us, their technical ability will mean that they can still pass the ball kind of in a big circle around us, whoever plays where, I reckon. So.
And it also sounds like we're not going to have many of the missing bodies back.
Exactly. Well, also, I've got a slightly more advanced view on this because I've got to see Man City in the flesh already this season.
Yes.
Yay. And they were terrible. And they still could have beaten us.
But weren't Spurs also like very lucky on the balance of play in that game?
Oh, it was a 0-0 all day long type game.
Yeah.
City had three chances in the first 5 minutes, and I thought it was going to be the most enjoyable afternoon I'd had in quite a while. And then they just fell asleep.
Yeah.
It was lots of passing around the back. It was like watching, you know, kind of Arsenal in the sort of mid-teens type years.
Or shoot.
Pass, no shots, just pass around the back. And then as soon as Spurs got the goal, they didn't know what to do with themselves. They literally shit the bed trying to score a goal.
Sadly.
Cancelo and Mendy were absolute liabilities all game long. Cancelo had one ball, which was passing it like a channel ball, trying to pass it through the defence for the wide player to run diagonally onto. A ball that looks great when it comes off, but when it doesn't, it's a damn good invitation for a counter-attack.
And we know all about that.
Yes. So, obviously, we won't have been watching the tapes of that game, knowing us. So, we'll just fall for that time and time again.
Why bother?
Tapes are for losers who don't have a football brain, apparently. Yeah.
You know who uses tapes? Unai Emery uses tapes. And how did that work out? Oh, he won in Europe. Anyway, moving on.
No. I'm not having this. Unai Emery. Oh, man. I nearly got in a fight with Lee over this earlier. Unai Emery was damn lucky the games we won. Like, you can, as I said, you can quote statistics at me, but we won a lot of games that we really didn't deserve to win. And that was fine margins and it was luck. it was like ricocheting off people's backsides luck.
Well, it was hugely reliant on our two strikers being
Aubameyang outperforming XG by some ridiculous ratio that's unrepeatable. Yes.
That's basically what I was going to say in a different way. Yes.
Whereas now apparently he's worse than Gabriel Jesus. So, yes.
A Gabriel Jesus assist machine. Who knew? Anyway, without even thinking about that, because it'd be far too depressing to get involved in that, I think we'll say goodbye to you this week, listeners. I hope that you've enjoyed where we've got to so far. We're not even going to bother doing score predictions for the weekend, because, my God, why would you? And all I'll say is roll on the start of the season in September. But yeah, thanks if you got this far. If you've heard any weird noises in the background, that is my young offspring trying to work out whether he wants to be sick or wee everywhere. It's a choice between the two. Thank you to Helen for speaking to me and to you and to all of us. And do remember that you can, as always, get 20% off and free shipping the Performance Package 3.0 with manscaped.com using the code DCPOD20. That's DCPOD20. And obviously, you've already heard all about their wonderful products. So, yeah, if you want to get clean down there, have a think about it. All right. Take care, everyone, and have a wonderful week. Cheerio.